No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to The Show For You, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, a part of the USA Today sports media group, the NFL Wire. My co-host is Seth Cox from EventToTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and also the co-host of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. And Seth, well, before we get started talking about the Cardinals, how is everything as you're about to, you are just, what is it, days-ish away from making your way from, you know, balmy Arizona to really, really cold Illinois?
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. I leave in 8 days, so we'll see how that goes, and be ready to go. And you know, it's exciting, nerve wracking. It'll be interesting. Definitely a change from, like you said, being here in Arizona to Aurora, Illinois, where it's 1 degree right now.
Ooh. That's cool, but no worries, listeners. We I don't think we're going to have a show next week due to the holidays, and probably as Seth was telling before the show, probably won't want to recap the game coming this weekend anyway. Oh, that's pessimistic, isn't it? But we will make it work to where, despite being in different states, we will still put together awesome episodes of this wonderful podcast that y'all listen to, which we appreciate. You know, the Cardinals are officially eliminated from the playoffs. They lost on Sunday 48-41 to the New Orleans Saints. We're not going to dwell too much on that game because there's actually quite a bit of other stuff to talk about that's, you know, connected kind of to the game. But ultimately, the Cardinals lose 48-41 to the New Orleans Saints. They fall to 5-8-1 and are officially eliminated from playoff contention. They give up nearly 500 yards of offense to the Saints. Aside from two kneel downs, they give up in 12 drives, they managed, and 10 drives, they were only able to stop them twice, one on the defensive touchdown and on one punt. All the other ones they managed to score on, while the offense overall played pretty well. But, you know, special teams, bad penalty, you know, kind of the same theme as we've seen all year. You know, there was a missed field goal, there was a missed extra point, and there were some critical penalties. I wrote about it on CardsWire. It basically came down to two untimely penalties that would have been the difference of the game. They gave up on a third down play in the first half. There was an incompletion on third down, which would have had the Saints kick a field goal. Marcus Golden gets flagged for face mask, and they get the first down. They score a touchdown. That's at minimum a 4-point difference. Might be seven if they, you know, they miss the field goal. Then the other one is, you know, Will Lutz kicks the field goal and Justin Bethel lines up in the neutral zone. The penalty gives them a first down, and then they score a touchdown. Instead of settling for three, they get seven. That's another 4 points, 8 points that they out of stupid penalties, and the Cardinals lost by seven. So that's that in a nutshell, isn't it, Seth?
Yeah, and it's just one of those things. It you know, you and I talked about it before. I've lamented the offensive performance quite a bit this year, but in this situation, the defense was awful. Like, can you get a stop? And I know that Calais Campbell had or Marcus Golden had the sack that Calais Campbell returned for a touchdown, but I mean, at some point when your offense is just putting you back on the field in a key situation to make a play, you have to make a play, right? And we just, that's, I don't know. I
mean, you've got to make a stop sometimes. You don't, granted, that's the number one offense. So you don't have to stop them every time, but you have to stop them sometimes, right? Yeah, you should be able to get more than one punt in a ball game.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's just one of those things. You look at it, and it's disappointing that that's the result you saw in the final game of the season from the home team. You know, but I talked about in my keys to the game, we talked about on the podcast last week, you need more than Calais Campbell and Patrick Peterson to show up. Like, Marcus Golden had the nice sack, strip sack. Tony Jefferson made a couple plays, but from a down to and even Peterson got beat by Tavares Cadet or whatever his name is.
And that was more of a miscommunication thing. He looked like he had no idea he was supposed to cover him, because why in the world would you have Patrick Peterson coming running back out of the backfield? So he just
exactly. But you know, you just look at the whole thing, and it was just one of those situations where, you know, I was talking to my dad about it during the game, and we're watching the game, and it's like, you know, well, they seem to be doing a nice job on everybody not named Brandon Cooks, and so then they put Patrick Peterson on Brandon Cooks, and all of a sudden Michael Thomas comes alive. And I said, that's the problem. Despite Pro Bowl alternate Marcus Cooper being out there, you have only one guy that can actually cover. And that, you know, causes issues. And it comes to fruition in games like that, where you have a team that has not one, not two options, but three or four options. You know, they're kind of the mirror image of the Cardinals. What we expected
the Cardinals should have been.
Yes. In terms of weapons galore. So it's just one of those things that you look at and you get frustrated with overall. But like you said, there's not too much to lament at this point. Like, it was a really long road to hoe, even with the Cardinals still would have been in the playoff contention. Let's be honest, they weren't really in playoff contention anyways. Especially if they're giving performances like that at home, because now they have to go on the road for the last two games of the season. At least they get LA the last game of the season, so we should see a spirited performance from the defense finally. I'm hoping we get it this week as well, but you know, for some reason, the Cardinals can only play the Seahawks good once a season. And so I'm hoping that that wasn't used up in the tie earlier this year.
Yeah, let's hope. So for tonight's show, recording on a Tuesday night, so you're probably listening to it a Wednesday or Thursday, or maybe even later in the week. We're going to focus much less on the actual game or looking back to what went wrong. We've kind of covered that already. But the Pro Bowl teams have been announced. We're going to talk about the Pro Bowl announcement, the three players that the Cardinals have on the team, the five that are alternates, and the players who didn't make it, as there's at least one very notable snub. We'll talk about Larry Fitzgerald as his, you know, comments made in the media, and, you know, comments made publicly about his uncertainty moving forward, and speculation that I'm not sure where it came from about the potential of maybe playing somewhere else, getting traded elsewhere. We'll talk about that a little bit, as well as Chandler Catanzaro and Justin Bethel and their play this year and their future with the team. And then look ahead to the Seahawks game, and more specifically about, you know, who are the young guys that are going to get an opportunity in the weeks to come. So that's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red, as we start the meat of the episode. But I'll let you know before we get started that this episode is brought to you by FanEssentials.net, the website where you can get signed up. And if you're a fan of collecting gear from your favorite team, NFL, NBA, or even MLB, that FanEssentials is a place for you, because you sign up for a team and they deliver the gear right to your door month after month. It's perfect for yourself. And for the holidays, it's actually a great idea for the sports fan in your life. Sign up at FanEssentials.net. They have prices. They have plans beginning at $34.99 a month. And using the promo code CRED for our Rise Up CRED listeners, you can get 15% off of your first month to test it out. So visit FanEssentials.net for all the essentials that you need. And we're going to go ahead and get started now on we're going to talk Pro Bowl. The announcement was made Tuesday night. It's official. The Cardinals have three Pro Bowlers, and five alternates. It's not actually too bad considering the season that they've had, but the names are expected. Larry Fitzgerald, his 10th Pro Bowl. Patrick Peterson, his 6th Pro Bowl. And David Johnson, the talk of, you know, so much when it comes to the Arizona Cardinals. You can't not talk about him. He makes the Pro Bowl. With the five alternates being Justin Bethel at special teams, Mike Iupati at guard, Calais Campbell, linebacker, and perhaps the surprise of the group, Marcus Cooper at cornerback. What's the first? What's your initial reaction, at least to the players actually chosen, to Fitz, Pat, and David Johnson?
Oh, well, first I was going to say, do you think they wrote down or like just marked Marcus Cooper and Tony Jefferson's name was like the one next to it, and they meant to mark that bubble and they just missed?
Is there another, or maybe Marcus Cooper? I mean Marcus Golden?
Yeah, exactly. I don't think there was anything wrong with the guys that made it. I continue to say David Johnson's the best player in the NFL right now. Le'Veon Bell just destroyed. You don't do fantasy football, but 2 weeks ago, you know, against the Bills, he had like 9,000 yards roughly in a singular game. And then this week, you know, he comes out and doesn't really do much. And it wasn't that he didn't do much. I mean, he had a nice game, don't get me wrong, but you look at it and that's what kind of separates David Johnson from everybody else, right? Like, he had 23 rushing attempts for 93 yards. Le'Veon Bell did in the game, had 38 receiving yards. So, he had over 130 total yards, but no touchdowns. I mean, you look at what David Johnson does week in, week out. Just for me, and maybe I'm a homer, you know, I tend not to be, obviously. Everybody knows that. But, I look at it, and David Johnson is the best player in the NFL. I'm just going to stick with that for right now. Patrick Peterson's the best corner in the NFL for my money. I know Chris Harris does a great job for the Denver Broncos, but you know, give me Peterson for the time being. And then I think Larry Fitzgerald's in a weird like kind of combination of he deserves it, but also there's probably guys you could have put in over him and nobody would have, crinkled their nose. It would have been one of those, okay, maybe this is a, this is a guy that gets snubbed in Larry Fitzgerald, but also maybe it's not. You know, but when you look at it, he's one of the probably the 10 most popular players in the NFL. He's a recognizable name. He's broken just an insane amount of records or climbed up record charts this year. So I think the three selections, obviously the top two in Johnson and Peterson, are no-brainers. And the homer in me loves the idea of Fitz every year because he's just a guy that, you know, you want to watch play as much as you can, and even if it's in a meaningless game like the Pro Bowl.
Well, and you know, I look back to the couple of years to his, you know, the 2012 season, the 2013 season, even the 2014 season, when his numbers were really pedestrian. They were at best pedestrian for whatever reason, quarterback play, injury, whatnot. They were really pedestrian. He was still getting to the Pro Bowl. And there is this understanding in the NFL that typically how it goes, the first Pro Bowl you make, or the first year you deserve to go to the Pro Bowl, you usually don't make it. And then you usually get one more beyond what you should. Most thought that was like 2013, 2014. But how can you keep him out when he's leading the NFL in touchdown? I mean, when he's leading the NFL in receptions. I mean, that's absurd. He's at his age leading the league in receptions. Someone who already has the reputation. I don't think there is a soul in the NFL who could speak an unkind word about him. He is just that high class a man when it comes to being on the field and off the field, the way he treats people. He has so much respect from his peers, and he's still getting it done on the field. He's not the same dominant player. I mean, he doesn't take over games, but he still gets the ball more than anyone else in the Cardinals. And there are critical moments. When there's a critical moment, guess what? He's the one making catches.
Yeah, and I think – sorry, had a cough there. I think what ends up happening too often is that the Cardinals actually go away from him instead of going at him more. And when it's all said and done, I think that the – you know, it's – like you said, it's a deserved thing. He's clearly the best receiver on the Cardinals, David Johnson notwithstanding. So you look at it, and it's clear that for this season, in all of a sudden what might be his last, you get one more Pro Bowl at least.
And you know, moving to the alternate, I can't honestly. There isn't a complaint I have about. We'll talk about the snubs, but of the guys that didn't make the actual Pro Bowl roster, I've got no problem with. Calais Campbell, that's a tough one, but he's in that situation as a defensive lineman. Voters like gaudy stats. And Calais never has gaudy stats. I mean, he's got the 6 sacks, but the Pro Bowl voting was done. I mean, he picked up 2 on Sunday, so he's got 6 sacks on the season, something that's never been done because he's had 6 sacks pretty much every season since 2009 or 2010. And that's unheard of. That's historic when it comes to the Cardinals. But he's productive, dominant all the time. So I don't have any problem with that. Mike Iupati had a down year. Chandler Jones looked like a world beater to start, but he turned into, you know, second-half Chandler Jones and second-half Chandler Jones. Justin Bethel has not been the same player this year as he has in years past, obviously. Still gets the recognition. And then here's the kicker. How in the world is Marcus Cooper a Pro Bowl alternate? It must be because he's got the 3 picks, and he had the one. I think he had the picks. He had the pick 6. So when they're going up and down the, you know, cornerback stats, and they see the 3 picks and a touchdown, they're, oh, good. Because the cornerback position isn't that bad in the NFC. I mean, you've still got a Patrick Peterson, Richard Sherman. You've got cornerbacks in New York doing great. Janoris Jenkins had a fantastic season. Can you explain why he's an alternate? I can't come up with it other than – obviously, interceptions matter for defensive backs.
Either, like you said, either they were trying to hit Marcus Golden or Tony Jefferson's bubble was right next to it. Like, Marcus Cooper hasn't been bad per se, but he also hasn't, you know, necessarily been good per se.
Moments. That's it.
If you're into Pro Football Focus rankings, I think he's in the 100s in terms of cornerback play. I can go back. I don't have them in front of me right now, but you know, I can go to even like Bleacher Report's NFL 1000 and see where he ranks in that as I kind of scroll through it. But yeah, I think you and I would say the only thing that we disagreed with is probably not we thought that a guy had a beef to at least be an alternate. And maybe I missed it, but Tony Jefferson's not even an alternate, right?
Nope. He's our snub, so we should talk about him. Obviously, if we look across the board on the Arizona Cardinals, I mean, the years that the other guys have had, no receiver deserves it. Jermaine Gresham at tight end has been playing well as of late, but obviously hasn't had the stats to be in the mix. Carson Palmer, he was – regular Carson Palmer up until recently. He said he's playing much better, but you know, last year, you wouldn't expect him to make the Pro Bowl with the season that he's had. But obviously you look at the Cardinals and you have to point your finger at Tony Jefferson and said, that guy deserved the Pro Bowl. that guy deserved the Pro Bowl. And I actually just wrote about it tonight, looking at, you know, who the snubs are. Tony Jefferson is a snub, but I understand it. The safeties that are ahead of him, Harrison Smith, Landon Collins, and Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, his stats are better than Harrison Smith. Now, Tony Jefferson leads all safeties by a large margin in tackles for loss, but he doesn't have any interceptions. He's got a tackle number. He's making plays. He's been very, very good. Is a name. And, you know, when he got that big contract, that kind of puts you in the thing. It's like people expect things out of you. And unless you have a down year, you're going to get in. Ha-Ha Clinton Dix has had a fantastic year himself. He's got the gaudy interception numbers as well. Landon Collins for New York is playing. He's playing with his lights. I mean, he's lights out this season. He's playing out of his mind this season. Is he a snub? Yes. Does he deserve to be in it? Yes. But is it understandable why he got left out? Yeah, because this is the first year he's done it on a full-time basis. And I just said, one of the things about the Pro Bowl is you don't get in. You rarely get in the first time you deserve it. Rarely.
And you named off a really strong set of safeties that went in over him. It's not like it was Marcus Cooper who got in over him. Like, and I'm picking on Marcus Cooper, but, you know, like, you get what I'm saying? Like, it's not like it was this, you know, it was bad players. It was just guys, you know, that, like you said, they either have a better reputation or they have had a better season. And then that happens, unfortunately. You know, it's one of those things when you go back and you look at it this year, let's see, you know, Harrison Smith is going to probably not play in the game. Landon Collins and Ha-Ha Clinton Dix could both pass on the game. So, you know, you could see him in there. You could really see him getting in there. I wanted to look and make sure there was no other names on there. You know, and so you don't have Earl Thomas on there. You don't have Cam Chancellor on there. I mean, Landon Collins has been the best safety in the NFL this year for my money. I could be wrong, but that's just my opinion. I mean, Clinton Dix... he's a better pure free safety. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Than Tony is, but he, you know, I don't know if he's had a better season than Jefferson.
I think there's actually something as well to the Cardinals scheme at safety, because you look at some of the stats that Rashad Johnson had over the years, because he also had interception numbers. He had gaudy stats. But even then, when he hit the free market, you know, whether it was his age, he just didn't draw the interest that we all thought he probably would and deserved to get. I think ever since Adrian Wilson's departure, who had that reputation, I think there might be something to the scheming that the Cardinals have defensively, at least for maybe among the players and the coaches, where the Cardinals safeties – do well in terms of statistical play, not because of their game playing ability so much. It is there's their scheme, that they're a plug and play. They're a scheme player. I can see where that perhaps is the issue. I mean, obviously, you know, Tyrann Mathieu is the exception, and Tyrann Mathieu, name that he is, even from a season ago, didn't even get a sniff as an alternate, which tells you how really down he was this year, because we've seen players with down seasons with the name recognition who still managed to get in, and even an alternate, and he's not even a sniff in an alternate this year with this, which tells you about the kind of season that he and the Cardinals had.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about him, because he got absolutely destroyed in that game.
Yes, and then wouldn't even the one play that the long touchdown, and yeah, then he gave up. He gave up.
Yep.
He didn't even, you know, the same honey badger who ran down Jared Cook. Now, granted, you know, Jared Cook's not quite as fast, but he gave up on the play.
Yeah.
But you know, but yeah, but definitely. Matthew, he gave up on the play. And that's the one that I actually tweeted it at the moment. It's like, don't go run after him or anything.
But yeah, it's this season. I don't want to talk about this season anymore. Let's talk about the snubs. Honestly, I feel bad for Tony Jefferson, and honestly, I feel bad for Calais Campbell because I feel like he's in a position at that defensive, end position where you don't really get any love because he's not going to get the sack numbers others are. So, I don't know.
Well, it helped because they moved in technically. They changed it a couple years ago. They stopped calling him defensive end and they called him a D tackle. And so now he gets, six sacks for DT is a much better thing than, six sacks for a D end when you're competing with all those 4-3 edge guys. And 4-3 edge guys. But the problem
is now you have Aaron Donald who has 37 sacks a season. So, Donald might be the best defensive lineman in the NFL with J.J. Watt hurt. So, it's one of those things where he's not going to put up the stats that other guys that are able to do different things are. But, in the same way, let's not complain too much. We just got Larry Fitzgerald back in the Pro Bowl too. So you can only have one legacy, I think, from a 5-8-1 team. So,
yeah, it makes sense. And then they really have two because Patrick Peterson's going to have that reputation. He's going to go to the Pro Bowl every year.
I think honestly, he's still the best corner in the NFL. I think that would be the one difference. But like I said, you can't complain about Calais not getting in when he's similar year in terms of impact as Larry, because Larry got in. So you know what I'm saying? So
right, and there's always other players. He just doesn't have the same. And you tend to get flash. So Larry, but here's the impressive thing. If you remember from All or Nothing, there were really two things left on Larry's list. Two things. He got number one. He wanted to get that 10th Pro Bowl so that he could be alone with Jerry Rice as the only receivers to have double-digit Pro Bowl appearances. The other one is not going to happen. And let's segue to the next section. It's the next segment of the show. We're going to talk about Larry Fitzgerald and his future. For some, whatever reason, the question of Larry's future came up again. On Sunday night after the game, he gave a vague quote about his future. Then he appeared on the Westwood One pregame Monday night football pregame show. Jim Gray, great reporter, good, gets right to the point on some of these things. He says, okay, so you said this. I interpret it meaning I think it feels like that you're going to retire after the season. And then Larry says what he says. He says, it's not that I'm contemplating retirement. I'm uncertain what I'm doing, what my future has. Led to a whole nother set of speculation starting today. I don't know where it started. I don't know if it started with the morning show here locally about the potential that, I've always said this. The situation looks like this. Larry Fitzgerald's going to retire or he's going to play for the Cardinals. But I don't know where it came from, but the possibility where he wanted to go elsewhere to try and win it with championship for whatever reason. I don't know how it came up, but it's been the talk today. It's been the talk a little bit on Twitter, and then it was, it's been talked about all day here locally. I don't understand it. It seems absurd to me.
I don't know. I mean, let's remember Jerry Rice went forever for Oakland, right? And then he had brief stints in Seattle and Denver.
Yes. Difference, though. There's a difference. Larry's under contract for next year. How in the world is he going to go anywhere else? It would be a different story if he was were expiring. But he's already under contract for next year, so he's either going to retire or he's going to play next year. He's not going to force a trade.
I don't think he's going anywhere this offseason unless he retires. But I don't see it. I don't know where the talk came up of this year unless he goes to Keim and just says, look, can you trade me? I've done everything I can for this organization. I can't do any more. And well, we've all seen now the video of the Michael Floyd arrest.
Ooh.
I that seemed to hit him pretty hard, didn't it? Didn't it seem like he took that harder than? I mean, I get that they're close, but I mean, you would think Larry would understand the Cardinal situation. Like, look, dude, like you screwed up.
Like, and I'll be honest, I would wonder if he didn't have the. I mean, I'm sure he had Mike's story. I don't know if he had the perspective, the perhaps, yeah. of what we found out on pregame on Sunday when Michael Bidwill came out. And you know, I'm going to say the truth is somewhere probably in between. But between what we saw in the video, which was, oh my gosh, he was impaired and was not in the right. He was not in a good state of mind from what it looked like. To Bidwill saying that he didn't want to open up to it, he refused to kind of address the situation. They found out about the arrest an hour and a half before they actually heard from him, which NFL teams tell their players, you know, if you're ever in the bind, you call this guy. They've got a director of security. He's the guy you call before anyone else. Before you call an attorney, probably. And obviously he handled it poorly for whatever reason. Floyd handled it poorly. But, you know, taking it back to Fitz, and there was actually it happened as we were having the show. Where is the tweet from? It was a retweet from Mark Dalton. That's why it was. Mark McClune, he caught up with Larry when he was, you know, taking kids Christmas shopping tonight, and Fitz said, I would never play anywhere else. So I think we can put that to bed. He's never going to play anywhere but here. Just a question of how long. I said throughout this year, it would not surprise me at all if he retires. He looks tired. Now, he's playing at an extremely high level, but the comments that he's made about practice, comments that he's made about training camp, and I've seen that knee wrapped up. He is tired. He can play for a long time and play at a high level, but there is something, at least there is a weight on him because he wants to win so badly. And I could see it very likely his retiring after this year. Now, I think he'll play next year. Because it sounds like they're going to try and regroup again. Palmer seems pretty certain. It looks pretty certain Palmer's going to play. And I think as long as Palmer's around, Fitz is going to keep riding it out. But it wouldn't surprise me at all. Fitz is at the point in his career where he just wants to win. And the comment that kind of stuck out is that, you know, you end up going home at the end of the season, you see these other teams, and it just eats at you. It eats at it. And then you can see that the hurt after the Carolina game, just the absolute just pain that you can see, combined with the weight and the, you can tell there's just fatigue in his body and his mind about playing in the NFL. Because, you know, it wouldn't surprise me, but I think he'll be back.
Yeah, and I think he'll be back too. And I think, you know, he's got at least next year left in him. Maybe the end of this season takes too much out of him, and that'll be what's interesting to see. Because him on the sidelines on that bucket on Sunday was similar. It wasn't as heartbreaking, obviously, as him in the Carolina locker room after All or Nothing. But you see it in his face, the what more do I have to give? Right? Like what more can I give? And so at the same time, I think these losses start to mount and for Fitz, it's probably to the point where he's like, is it worth putting my body through this one more time, two more times, three more times, however many more times he wants to do it. To go for a ring again. And I think he's going to make the decision based on what he sees happening with the Cardinals more than anything else.
It's
going
to be really interesting as well. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, Fitz is also the type of guy that strikes me as that he probably came into his career with, you know, like you said, these goals. And he's got one left, and it's the ring. He's hit all the other ones.
Right.
He's already come out and said, I'm not going to play long enough to break Jerry Rice's records. He's
or even catch Tony Gonzalez, which means the most he's going to play is like one more year, because he could almost catch it with two more years of what he's doing now. He could almost catch. Yeah. So he's retiring this year, or he's retiring next year.
Right. So you look at that, and I think for him is the decision is, do I want to put the work in? And what has Arizona done that makes me want to put the work in? But like I said, I think he came in with the plan. It was probably like, oh, year 12, that's my last year. And so maybe, you know, I don't know. Maybe he's at his expiration date or past his expiration date that he went in with his plan when he started in the NFL. And so now he's, you know, having to make harder decisions because he expected to have a Super Bowl by this time.
It's a tough stuff. Tough stuff. So let's move on. Let's move on from that. Larry Fitzgerald obviously is probably the greatest thing we've seen here and might ever see here as any sports fan. But kind of coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red, we're going to talk a little bit about a couple of players who are not so much on the nice list when it comes to Christmas time. They're not doing so well. So coming up next, we're going to talk about Chandler Catanzaro. There's his play and his future, and the same thing about Justin Bethel. That's next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red. This segment, we're going to talk about a couple of players who are not necessarily on people's happy list. One, kicker Chandler Catanzaro. Two, cornerback / maybe never cornerback again, special teamer Justin Bethel. Performance for both of them this past Sunday are raising questions about their future with the team. Chandler Catanzaro missing another field goal. Granted, you can't complain too much when you miss a 55-yard field goal. But then he misses another extra point, and his body language is terrible. He is in his head, and he did a terrible onside kick, which leads you to believe, it makes you almost think, there's no way he's back in Arizona. He's set to be a restricted free agent at the end of the season. He's not going to get tendered. And at best, they're going to bring him back with another legitimate kicker to compete with him.
And I think they need to, don't you?
I think so. That kick, that first kick of the season, got in his head when he missed that game-winning kick. It got in his head. Then he's gone through all those holders. He's gone through two more long snappers. I mean, in terms of kicking life, he's had it pretty rough. I mean, as rough a life as you can have as a kicker in the NFL. He had an undrafted rookie long snapper who wasn't that good when it counted. Then his holder gets hurt, so they bring in another holder. They bring Butler back, and now he was a terrible punter, so they bring in Matt Weil, who's brand new to holding, and they're on a second long snapper. And this is just a couple of years off of him having the consistency of Mike Leach and Dave Zastadil. Andrew Butler, to an extent, last season, there was consistency. And now there's not. But, you know, Bruce Arians defends him. I mean, Bruce Arians has done a good job of calling him out and defending him as he came out on Monday saying, hey, I believe in Catanzaro. I believe in Chandler and his talent. He's as talented as any other kicker in the league. I believe in him going forward. But also calling him out said, you know, I hold my breath every time he kicks an extra point, or he's got to, you know, or we've got to do a better job on the onside kick. And, you know, he does have an extra perspective because his son was a kicker. And, you know, it seems kind of odd. This is in the outside perspective. You would think, especially a guy like Catanzaro who talks about the process. Yes, the long snapper matters. Yes, the holder matters. But ultimately, doesn't the kicker just need to look at the ball and kick it?
Right. You still got to kick it. You know, and the whole thing is, and we talked about this last week, you know, You look at this thing as the kicker, and he's not Steven Guskowski. He's not Adam Vinatieri, obviously. Very few are, let's be honest, but he's not Adam Vinatieri. I don't even know if he's like Steven Hauschka, right?
Nope.
So from year to year, kickers are all replaceable. They're all interchangeable parts. And so that's what's always weird to me about, you know, and we talked about this last week, but that's what's always weird to me about the staying with guys trying to ride out bad streaks. Now, I'm not saying, you know, he misses a kick, go cut him, but you look at the last 2 years, I think I read somewhere he's missed like nine extra points.
Yes.
And so that's absurd.
And he's 16 of 22 this year on field goals. It's
now, see, like you said, the 55-yarder, whatever. The 55-yarder is whatever. It is. You know, it's not a big deal. I mean, it is a big deal, but it's not a big deal. But nine extra points in two seasons, and it's not even two full seasons yet. I mean, we've still got two games to go. So nine extra points in 30 games? I mean, you're – I don't know. Like, if you're at 75%, that's not where you want to be as a kicker. So in that instance, I think if you have a guy that's so mentally weak that every time there's a change at holder or long snapper, so it holds the room hostage. So then, or they have to then cut a young promising safety to then keep an injured punter for an extra game. You know, then, you know, maybe you don't need that kicker, but that's just me. Loyalty to a fault sometimes is weird to me.
The same thing can be said about Justin Bethel. He, what a weird year for him. Harsh words from Arians when it comes to cornerback play, failure in progress. And, in fairness, I get that. I get that. He, and really, his inability to play cornerback really set the team back. He was their plan from the time he signed that contract. When he signed that contract extension, they were saying, we have our number two corner. He was playing through the broken foot. He had the injury in workouts. He missed all of the offseason workouts. Then he re-aggravates it before training camp, so he never got any reps. So he never got better. And, you know, he hasn't looked any better. And you've noted it. He plays afraid when he's in coverage. There are plays that he makes, but when he's out there as well, he looks like he's playing scared. And I understand the injury because he's been dealing with the foot pain all year. But now he's making mistakes on special teams. Granted, he still leads the team by far in special teams tackles. He's got 11 on the season. Nobody else on the team, I believe, has more than four. So he's still making plays. But the coverage team hasn't been as good. He had three offside penalties last week on special teams, two on extra points and the one on the field goal that turned into a touchdown because of the penalty. You know, he's the failure in progress at cornerback, and now he's starting to fail on special teams. And the question is, with as many with the cap problems they potentially could be having, despite all the free agents that they have, is Justin Bethel going to survive the offseason?
No. Oh, no. I mean, that's a tough one. You know, you and I talked about this last week, and we'll talk about this even more in the offseason, but you take a chance and overpay Justin Bethel as a special teamer, probably by $2 million a year. I'd have to look. But, you know, probably about – what's he getting, $5
million? Lorenzo Alexander, 3 years and $10 million coming off a special team season. But they also saw him potentially as playing some at outside linebacker. But basically they paid him $3 million a year for special teams play.
Okay, and so they're paying him $5 million a year. Yeah, so they're a couple million over. But, you know, they took that risk thinking, okay, his upside is cornerback two. And a cornerback two is, what, $8 million a year? So, you know, they seven and a half. So they basically split the difference and said, okay, we'll pay him five. If it works out, that's great. But it goes back to what you and I talked about. And something that, you know, I've come into understanding more and more the more I discuss things with, you know, friends outside the NFL and just contacts I've made, you know, within the football world. And one of the hardest things to do from a perspective of especially good teams is self-scout, you know, and evaluate your own talent. Because you tend to look at everybody through the glass lens of this is where he could get to. You know, who was it that said he's got as much athletic ability as Patrick Peterson, you know, and yada, yada, yada last year. And so they're looking at these guys. They're looking at Andre Ellington. They're looking at Justin Bethel. They're looking at, you know, an Alex Okafor, a Deion Buchanan so far, you know, through the schism of, okay, they were good. Now they're going to get even better, but maybe they're not. You know, there is another side to that coin that not everybody gets better. And as Arizona Cardinals fans, we should know that more than any team, right? Like, we've watched promising players wallow for years. So
don't remind us.
Yeah, but you look at that and so I think that's what's happening with like Justin Bethel is you sign him to this in-between deal. You know, you say, okay, special teams ace is going to be about $3 million a year. A really high-end, you know, middle-end corner two is going to run us about $7 million a year. We'll pay you five. That's a fair split the difference. If you hit that high-end corner two, we got a deal. If you, you know, are just a special teams ace, you got a deal. But I think – and we saw it on draft day or on day two of the draft. But we saw it come to fruition. They had a plan in place. They knew the plan was we're going to have Justin Bethel as cornerback two, and we're going to bring in a guy to compete for that cornerback two / cornerback three spot. Obviously not the slot corner, but, you know, true cornerback outside cornerback three. And then the draft happened, and in that second round, there was just that
the wrong corner.
Absurd.
All of them
run on corners. And then the Cardinals go, oh, crap. And so the plan was still, we got to get a corner. But they then had to get a corner who, you and I talked about this from the day that we talked about the draft. I think it was the Tuesday after the draft when I got back. Never supposed to see the field this year in a situation where he was expected to cover. And we saw again on Sunday why. It has nothing to do with athleticism, being in place, competitiveness, nothing of that nature. He has zero feel for the game right now. But the dude has no idea where the ball is. It seems like ever. Let's be completely honest. Like that touchdown he gave up to Mike Thomas, he was in perfect position, and he made nada effort on the ball. Nada. Didn't try to turn around. Didn't even stick his hands up. That was – and so you look at it and you go, okay, this is where the Brandon Williams is. And that's – and you and I, we cautioned about that from the very beginning. Like, this dude is not going to be ready because he's not played enough cornerback to have a feel for the intricacies of the game. And so when your plan is Justin Bethel and let's just say like a James Bradbury, the kid I really liked that went to Carolina and it's playing very well. When those are your choices, right? You're saying, okay, that's not a bad 1-2 combination opposite Patrick Peterson. Healthy Justin Bethel, obviously. But when your choices then go to not healthy Justin Bethel, running back slash cornerback Brandon Williams,
who is essentially the same, almost the basically a raw
same player as Justin Bethel,
only less experienced now.
Exactly, and so then you make a desperation move that has apparently worked in getting Pro Bowl alternate corner Marcus Cooper for a 7th round pick. So, you know, clearly they went in after the preseason and went, crap, we got to figure out this cornerback thing because this is not going to work. Because it wasn't like they played one game, right, and then went and got Marcus Cooper. Like, they played all the preseason games. Justin Bethel still couldn't get healthy. And then they're – even despite – all the accolades that were being and praise that were being thrown on Brandon Williams, the Cardinals were still like, we probably need to just in case hedge our bets here. And, you know, it came to fruition. So the plan was never this. The plan was never, you know, wounded Justin Bethel, not ready to play Brandon Williams. And they looked at it from the other spectrum of, we're going to have a healthy Justin Bethel and a, you know, tier two in the draft corner that are going to compete for that cornerback two position. And it just didn't work. And so they kind of got caught with their pants down in the situation. And they, let's be honest, they've made the best of it. I mean, it hasn't been a complete disaster. The cornerback two spot is not the reason why they're at 5-8-1.
No. And you look at it, it wasn't until Sunday that they gave up a 300-yard passer. Now, granted, that's because mostly they played garbage quarterbacks all season. But I'm not going to let that be forgotten because they mostly played garbage quarterbacks this year. But the pass defense overall statistically has been good. The defense has statistically been good. But we've seen time and time again, what has kept this team from being great defensively is the fact that any quarterback can just go, oh, I'm going to throw it to the guy that other guy's covering.
Exactly. And we talked about that, you know, earlier, like, oh, Brandon Cooks is being covered by Marcus Cooper.
I think, throw the ball to him.
Yeah, I think it was Marcus Cooper, Tyrann Mathieu. And then I think it was it DJ Swearinger or was it Tony Jefferson? But anyways,
DJ ended up in the middle of the field by himself trying to, so there was something wrong on that. There was something wrong with the communication because I don't think they meant to have DJ Swearinger in the middle of the field.
But they, yeah, he so like, I mean, but that, but let's be honest, we would expect the Cardinals to do the same thing. They just haven't been able to do it this year. That was what they did all last year. You know, oh, you're going to man up with your best interior corner, Larry, you're going to put your best corner on Michael. All right, John Brown's going to just destroy you deep. And that's what happened early. And then it just, you know, didn't happen this year. Frustrating, but reality. I mean, that's just reality. So when it comes to Bethel, I think they give him another year. I really do.
Do they think, do you I don't think know they what try the, and make him restructure to – take a pay cut?
Yeah, probably. They probably ask him. So he got $315, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I could see them saying, hey, we'll extend you another one. They owe you $210. We'll give you $310 and give you, you know, $6 guaranteed instead. You know, instead of whatever he's got left guaranteed. Because I'm sure he doesn't have $6 guaranteed left because that would mean he somehow got close to $11 guaranteed. So, you know, they might try to say, oh, we'll give you, you know, an extra year, extend you, take some of that hit off and then spread out a guarantee over 3 more years, you know, $2 million a year or something like that. Because why would he say, oh, yeah, I'll take just a straight pay cut from you guys? But, you know, you never know, too, because he might be like, oh, yeah, I suck this year. Like, take the money back. I don't deserve it.
Well, because there's the gamble that, you know, who's going to pay him that much or even close to that much after the season that he had. So Bethel, I speculated, you know, during that game, maybe it was an emotional response. I said, there's no way. I thought Bethel's not going to be back next year. And Catanzaro at best is going to be back with real competition. I'm not talking about like those no-name kickers that they bring in that kick and punt just to be the other guy in the room. They'll have to bring. They need to bring in somebody to either break Catanzaro or to have him finally get over whatever his issues are.
They gotta bring in somebody. They have
make
to.
Any sense.
I'm all for keeping. You know, I'm all for keeping cohesion, but 9 extra points. It's not the field goals that bother me. It's really not. It's the 9 extra points.
Yeah, it makes sense. We're going to wrap up this next we're going to head on to the final segment of our Rise Up Sea Red show tonight. And we're going to look ahead to the Seattle Seahawks. What lies in store, and more specifically, what young players can we expect to see? There has been at least a little bit of movement with the Cardinals, but that's what's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red, talking young players and their game against the Seahawks. We're back for the final segment of Rise Up Sea Red, and what we saw last weekend, we saw at least the beginning, of some youth movement. Robert Kimbici got to play 25 snaps. He made the rotation finally. Harlan Miller was promoted from the practice squad this week, so we might see a little bit of him on special teams. Sims looks like he's going to get some he might be seeing some playing time as well, you know, splitting time with Cooper like he did early in the season before Cooper completely took his job from him. I mean, at this point, what can we hope for? At least Kimdichie is finally seeing the field. He didn't do anything much. I mean, you talked about it with me, but statistically, you look at the game sheet, he played 25 snaps, nothing, not a single stat. Now, the game release came out, the Cardinals released their game release for the Seattle game, and he did get credit for an assist tackle.
Woo!
So he did have woohoo!
We're on the board. Kimdichie,
3 tackles on the season. Yes.
We're on the board.
It's got to start somewhere. So I'm hopeful to see what he can do. Obviously, I don't think you or I have any hopes that the Cardinals are going to be even slightly competitive in this game, but maybe they can be. They do get up for the Seattle games, and Seattle's not very good right now. So who knows?
No, Seattle, you know, I'm going to talk to Phil Goals over the SB Nation site, and I know you guys got a Seahawks wire finally, right? So
yeah.
I'm interested to know their take on this Earl Thomas thing, and like, where does Earl Thomas fall in terms of how their defense is going to play out from here? That's my biggest question on them, because do you really give them credit for stopping the potent Los Angeles Rams offense? And let's be fair, they didn't really even stop them. I know they only scored 3 points, but they moved the ball. The Rams were moving the ball fairly well, and it was in Seattle. They just couldn't convert. Mm-hmm. Now let's be honest. We've seen that story from a healthy Arizona team. I'll just look at the 6-6 tie where they had over 400 yards of offense and could only score 6 points. So you never know. But I wouldn't, you know, put too much on it. I just hope for me. I just want to see Kimdichie get some series of snaps, like put him out there for a series or an entire series, not like a 3 and out, but like if they're driving a little bit, like leave him in there, let him play a little bit. Honestly, I like to see Harlan Miller at this point. I know he's probably not going to get very many snaps on the defensive side of the ball, but again, you got to find something. Tyrann Mathieu struggled this year, understandably so. I never understood the whole belief that Mathieu was just going to come back in and be Matthew. And I thought that was unfair to him.
Well, they did have Tyven Branch. I mean, in fairness, he was the insurance policy, although it was a really crappy insurance policy. He's more injury prone than Matthew.
Yeah. But, you know, so I want to see these young guys get a shot. We know Bame's not going to play. We know Toner's not going to play because they'll put every.
And if they do, it's a really bad situation.
Well, it's probably injuries, and you don't want to wish for injuries. So, and that's all the draft class, huh?
Oh, it is. That's all that's left. Marquis Christian, they might have liked an extra safety in Marquis Christian at some point, but you know, Drew Butler.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, I want to see these guys play. I don't care about not running David Johnson into the ground. I don't care about protecting Carson Palmer. Because if you do that, you're just giving up on the year. And so if you do that, then you got to make a decision. And no offense, but I don't need to see your stand play. So if you're going to do that, just make Zach Dyser the starter for the last two games. And let's go, right? Like, let's find out what this guy can do. But I don't think – I mean, it's not going to happen, one, and I don't want it to happen, two. But that would be my take on that.
For me, you know, the idea of sitting Carson Palmer to me is absurd. The only reason you do that is, one, the season's done, which it is, and two, you legitimately have a young quarterback you want to see play. Zach Dyser's not that guy. Has he been in the league since 2013? Still hasn't seen a snap ever. He is who he is. I mean, I'm sure he's a really solid number three, but come on. I don't want to see Zach Dyser. Yeah, and if you're running a football team, you can't sell that, especially if, you know, where there's chatter perhaps, or there's rumors that Arians has lost the locker room a little bit. You'll never get it back by just putting young guys out there for sake of putting young guys out there. It's a different story if you've got a potential franchise quarterback. It's a different story. High priced, you know, a high draft pick that you want to see. But if you're the team any good to have play Evan Bame and Cole Toner, it doesn't do anybody any good to see Zach Dyser play to make it look like you're purposely losing games.
No, because like you said, they don't have a Paxton Lynch or a, you know, throw another.
That's the difference. Like if they had drafted, you know, whoever this year, in the last couple games, that even that's disrespectful to Carson Palmer, who's not had a bad year. You know, when you have a quarterback, let's see, Carson Palmer is still a franchise type quarterback. You can't put him on the bench. That doesn't make any sense. He's not Brock Osweiler. He's not Robert Griffin. He's not Brian Hoyer. This is a guy with a pedigree who was an MVP candidate a season ago. He's going to throw for 4,000 yards again this year. And, you know, he's his numbers are right on par with what he's done his entire career. You can't just sit them
down. Yeah, he's back to being, you know, and we've talked about this. He's back to being the guy he actually is. Last year was more the outlier and obviously part of 2014. But, you know, he's back to being who he is, and who he is a you know, top, what, 10 to 15 quarterback in the NFL? 12 to 14? I mean, he's a quarterback that you can win with in season. I think he's still a quarterback you can win with in the playoffs. He's never really done it, but I still think putting the right talent around him, you can do that. He's just not – and this isn't
– He's not Tom Brady. He's not right. Tom Brady.
He's not even Drew Brees. I mean, no. He's not Drew Brees. You know, he's end of the road Peyton Manning more than he is anything else, where, you know, you look at what Peyton Manning had in Denver, and that was a great surrounding talent. That wasn't like it was, you know, old Austin Collie and those guys. So, you know, you look at it and you feel you feel like you can still get more out of Palmer in terms of, like, he can still produce for you. So keep that momentum going. Keep the belief in him going. I understand wanting to save him from injury because you're out of it. But again, you have nothing to look at. That's not, no offense to Drew Stanton. Like, I don't mean that in a negative way, but
Stan's a backup. Drew's, he's fine.
He's not. Yeah. He's not your answer down the road.
No. Now look at it. Seattle. Is there anything? I mean,
well, and Seattle has to play. Seattle has to play because they're still on a fight for that two seed.
Right. So at this point, we look at the Seattle game. What can we expect? I mean, David Johnson was able to get yards. He did not get chunks of yards, but he was effective in getting, keeping the offense on time when they were in Arizona. Can we expect him to have the same success? And I kind of look at this at this way. Do you think he'll be able to do the get the 100-yard mark again? Because this would be the game where it would be very difficult for him to. I think it's the most difficult situation that he'll find all year.
I agree with you. It's going to be man. And they're going to come out ready to go, and it's just going to be one of those situations where, you know, you're out of it, so you kind of don't worry about how much they think of this game. You get what I'm saying?
Right.
Like we've seen them last year when they had, right. We've seen them when they had nothing to play for last year.
I mean, now the question is, you know, they don't want to be embarrassed in Seattle. So if they can get off to a good start, okay. But I, you know, if they get punched in the mouth and don't respond well, it could get ugly in a hurry.
Oh man, that's gonna. And it's Christmas Eve. We're all supposed to be enjoying our family and time together. And this.
And they'll be looking forward to getting on that plane and getting back home so they can be home for their kids
and
this not is what not we, driving around in Scottsdale.
Yeah, oh, like geez. A son of a. I posted that on the site. I really debated whether or not to as well. And I decided to just put the links in there. I didn't even put the videos in there. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things like you hope for the pride of it. Because I don't think we've ever seen, maybe we have and I just haven't paid attention, but I don't think we've ever seen a Seattle team pack it in, have we?
You know, I can't think. No, I don't think they've ever packed it in.
So, you know, you want this to be the continuation of what we expected this season. You know, you want this to be the continuation of, all right, this is still a good team. You don't want this to get to garbage time. Right. Nobody wants this to get to garbage time. And so I think that's where it really, really matters. And so if they lose the game, they lose the game. I mean, Seattle's a very good team still. So let's not sugarcoat it. But, you know, when it comes to the overall self, like they need to show up, like you said, they need to be ready to be punched in the mouth because they're going to be by Seattle and they need to respond.
And for the fans' sake, because we've seen too many seasons like this, you don't want them to just let go just because they're not able to be in the playoffs. They're play for pride, play to beat your division rival. Play because you want to show that there's promise for next season. There are so many players that could be here next year, but could not be here next year. They need to show up. I mean, there's nothing else. We're kind of seeing the same thing over and over again. This game could be ugly, but Seattle just hasn't been that good. So hopefully the Cardinals play with that. I mean, that's the one thing I wasn't disappointed about on Sunday. The one thing I was not disappointed at all is they came out and played with passion. They played hard. They played poorly. I mean, they played poor mentally on a lot of senses, but they came out and did that. So they didn't give up.
Right. And I think it just goes back to what we've talked about. In the end, they're in 2016, they're just not a good team. And that's okay. I mean, that wasn't what we expected, but it's okay. That happens every once in a while. And so I think that's what happened in 2016. They weren't a good team this year. It's unfortunate, but it is what it is. So that we still know that good team is in there, or maybe we assume that the good team. Yeah, we hope that they're good. So give fans something to hold on to going into the offseason. Because, you know, as bad as it would suck to be 7-8-1 going into the offseason, it's going to be a whole lot better than going 5-10-1 and getting blown out.
And ended up in third place. Because they can still do that. They can still end up in third place.
Well, and getting blown out by Seattle, that's what I don't want to see.
So, no, definitely not. Well, before we depress ourselves into any more sadness, let's go ahead and wrap this show up. Sorry for those of you still listening. Well, again, programming note, the plan is probably no show next week. If it is, it'll be me. So I will be soloing the show. I'll be out of town. Seth will be on his way out of the state. So, and the game probably won't be all that notable to discuss. Unless something great happens, maybe we'll do it. But we're going to wrap up this episode of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. You can find us pretty much everywhere. We're featured on CardsWire.com. That's my site. You can find us on RevengeOfTheBirds.com. That's Seth's site. We're on Facebook, Rise Up Sea Red. We're on Twitter, Rise Up Sea Red, Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher Radio, Sports360AZ.com, iTunes, Google Play. Wherever you can find podcasts, you can find us. So on behalf of Seth Cox from RegOfTheBirds.com, I'm Jess Root from CardsWire.com, and this will wrap it up. Thanks for listening, and let's go Cardinals.